This is the Winn-Dixie Postgame Show, brought to you by Baptist Health, Ticket Exchange, Brooks Rehabilitation, Wells Fargo, Geico, Sonny's Real Pit Barbecue, and by Everbank. Now, to get things started, here's Cole Pepper.
Well, the Jaguars lose it in overtime. Final score, Minnesota 26, Jaguars 23. It looked like Blaine Gabbert was going to lead the game-winning drive, and then after some clutch decisions and plays made by the Jaguars coaching staff and team on the offensive side of the football, they don't do a blast on the kickoff. Minnesota gets it, able to position themselves downfield in basically 14 seconds to get to within Blair Walsh's field goal range. He boots it from 55 yards, sends it to overtime, and Walsh with the overtime field goal. Then the Jaguars can't get it done in OT on their possession, and that's the way it ends. Marco Coleman, the Jaguars had a great shot at winning this ball game, and maybe you could make the case they should have won this ball game based on what happened late in the game. Instead, it's an overtime loss to open the 2012 season.
Really some missed opportunities in that first half that came back to bite them in the second half. But, hey, this team fought all the way through the game. You know, to make a big play like that at the end of the game, to pass the shorts, that shows the resilience that, you know, right, that in itself shows this is a better team than last season.
And as one of the big questions, I think, that you have to ask in a year, particularly for a team that wins five games, is this a better team? Certainly right now it looks like it is. I would have to say that the big worry coming out of this ball game is injuries along the offensive front.
Yeah, it looks like they're going to be hitting wire and bringing in some guys because, you know, and it's tough, too. They've been snake-bitten pretty much the whole, you know, even including the preseason with those guys along that front. But you have to, you know, take your hat off to the preparation those guys have made because I don't think it was really a big issue. Minnesota was bringing blitzes after blitzes after blitzes, and these guys handled it. You know, regardless of who was in there, I thought the offensive line, for the most part, did a pretty decent job.
You know, there was pressure throughout most of the mid part of the ball game on Blaine Gabbert. Jaguars made a few adjustments, it appeared, maybe able to play off some of that play action. Both of the quote-unquote franchise running backs in this ball game, Adrian Peterson for Minnesota and Maurice Jones-Drew for the Jaguars, ran the ball a whole lot more than I think anybody expected going in. AP had 17 carries for 84 yards. I don't think anybody thought he would carry the ball 17 times this close removed to knee surgery. And because of the injury to Rashad Jennings, 19 carries, 77 yards for Mojo.
And it was very impressive on both guys' part. I mean, although, you know, Peterson has been in the training camp, you know, maybe in a little bit better shape. But Mojo coming in, you know, new offense. I could actually tell, though, that if he had been here just a few weeks ago, maybe he might have broke a couple of those runs that he was very, very close to breaking, that timing and in the body conditioning. But still, I thought he was very solid for the amount of time that he's missed.
All right, let's get you updated on scores from around the National Football League. We told you earlier that Atlanta had finished off Kansas City 40-24 at Arrowhead Stadium. And a big game in that ball game, Julio Jones, 6 catches, 108 yards, and 2 touchdowns. Matt Ryan, 23 of 31, 299 yards, and 3 scores. So a big game for that pass and catch combination as Atlanta wins at Arrowhead Stadium in Kansas City. Houston begins the season with a victory. They are the prohibitive favorites in the AFC South. And although they were a bit sluggish for most of the first couple of quarters, they finally got it going. Matt Schaub finding Andre Johnson just a couple of seconds after Arian Foster had scored his second touchdown of the ball game. This was all about turnovers and forcing Miami into turnovers. That's exactly what happened in the game. Ryan Tannehill making his first start. The rookie was 20 of 36, 219 yards, 3 interceptions, and a quarterback rating of just 39.0. So not a particularly impressive start for that rookie. Another rookie starting in the AFC, including the AFC South here, Andrew Luck. 21 of 41, 281 yards, a touchdown, 2 interceptions, 61.1 on the quarterback rating there as Chicago beats, rather is leading Indianapolis 41-21 with 2:43 remaining in the ballgame. So the Bears looking like they're going on to the victory. Also a final in the AFC South. Tennessee losing at home to New England 34-13. Tom Brady 23 of 31, 236 yards, 2 touchdowns. Jake Locker left that ballgame with a shoulder injury. He'd been playing fairly well to that point, completing 72% of his passes, throwing a touchdown, but a shoulder injury forced Matt Hasselbeck to come in. Didn't really matter. Brady, who connected with both of his tight ends, Aaron Hernandez and Rob Gronkowski in the first half, leads the Patriots to a 34-13 victory today. It was a lot closer than a lot of people thought, but Detroit held on to beat St. Louis 27-23. The Lions getting a touchdown pass from Matthew Stafford to Kevin Smith out of the backfield with 10 seconds remaining. They were trailing by three at that point. They win it late. Detroit wins at home and ruins Jeff Fisher's St. Louis coaching debut 27-23. Other games going on right now. In Cleveland, despite a just horrific day for Brandon Weeden, the rookie quarterback for the Browns, who has a quarterback rating of 9.2, his Browns actually lead Philadelphia 16-10 with 3:18 remaining in the ballgame. I don't know how in the world that's happening right now, but here's a Cleveland team starting a rookie at quarterback, at running back, and at wide receiver. And looking at some of the numbers, Trent Richardson with 19 carries today, just 39 yards in his debut. LeSean McCoy has gone over 100 yards, but at this point, the Eagles trail by the count of 16-10, 3:14 to play in the ballgame. RG3's debut today has been very, very impressive. The Heisman Trophy winner throwing two touchdowns and quarterback rating up over 138 right now. He has been outplaying Drew Brees in this ballgame, and Washington leads New Orleans 33-25, 3:23 remaining in the ballgame. Brees is connected with Lance Moore to bring the Saints to within that 8-point margin, and we'll keep you updated on that one as they play in the fourth quarter. Also, the Jets throttling Buffalo today, 48-28 to this point. Ryan Fitzpatrick has thrown three touchdowns in the second half, but it's too little too late as the Jets used offense, defense, and special teams to get things going early on, able to get a couple of early touchdown passes from Matt Sanchez, who has thrown three scoring passes in the ballgame, and Stephen Hill, the rookie from Georgia Tech, collecting one of those, and a guy who had caught a lot of flack from the Jets coaching staff earlier, Jeremy Curley, caught a touchdown and also has a punt return for a touchdown in the ballgame. All right, those are the scores from games going on around the National Football League. We'll keep you updated on everything that's going on, but for now, let's head back to Minneapolis. Time for the Bubba Burgers Coaches Report. Jeff Loggeman is in the Jaguars locker room with head coach Mike Mularkey.
Hard-fought game. Just came up short at the end.
That's the NFL. I mean, it's coming down to games like that. Every week it's like that. We have to learn how to win close games. If you want to be one of these consistent good teams, winners, we got to win these close games. I'm very proud of our football team for doing what they did. We had a lot of guys that had to play a part in this game, and to stick to the game plan and stick together and give us a chance to win all the way up to the end. Football team, there's good things. Day.
One of the good things I really thought was the play of your offense. I mean, scramble at the very end of the ball game. And Gabbert, that was just, I mean, an amazing catch by Cecil Shorts to give you what appeared to be maybe even the victory with 20 seconds left.
Yeah, well, this is 20 seconds, a long time in this league. But, you know, we did some good things. There's a lot to learn from this game, I think. As much as there is to learn, I think each guy is going to come away from this thing a better player.
Well, we are hoping
these guys for as hard as they worked.
Well, this is an antiquated stadium that is going out of style fast here, folks, and we are trying to hook up with Jeff Loggeman in the Jaguars locker room. Clearly, you can hear in Mike Mularkey's voice the disappointment, and you'll see it on the faces of these players. And you will hear it in their quotes and on the radio. 20 seconds left. Cecil Shorts grabbed a pass, went into the end zone. The two-point conversion gave the Jaguars a 23-20 lead. But then a return up to the 30-yard line, set up a couple of plays by Christian Ponder. Blair Walsh, the rookie kicker, delivers the game-tying 55-yard field goal. So now let's go back down to Jeff Loggeman. Jeff?
All right, thank you, Brian. So, Mike, defensively, could you have done differently there at the game, or what you had done differently, or is it just, hey, that's what they played well?
Well, we were worried about Harvin. You know, he was going to be a factor in this game. They do a good job of getting him in places to get the ball. And we were in a lot of those places. We just, you know, the tackling had a lot of missed tackles again, open field tackles that just allowed them to make some big plays off of it.
any injuries to report? Obviously, the list seemed to be very long along the offensive line, but obviously a concern for next week.
Yeah, I think, you know, really the only thing, Rashad didn't finish the game. I'm going to get more information on him, but we didn't want to risk it. We felt Maurice was running the ball well, and but I'll have more info after this game.
All right, thank you, Mike.
Thanks, Jeff.
All right, that's head coach Mike Mularkey with the Bubba Burgers Coaches Report. Also there, you heard the Brooks rehabilitation injury update. Heartbreaker in Minnesota, 26-23. The Vikings win it. A field goal as time expired from 55 yards, tied it, sent it to overtime, and then a 38-yarder ended up being the difference as the Jaguars fall on opening day in Minneapolis. This is the Winn-Dixie postgame show, and we will have more from the locker room. We'll also have a final stats check brought to you by Wells Fargo. Together, we'll go far. We'll take this break and come back to the Mall of America Field, the Metrodome, with more of the Winn-Dixie postgame show on Jaguars Radio. Well, sip more, pay less. Any size premium roast coffee, soft drink, or sweet tea is now just $1 at McDonald's. Any day, any size, any time. McDonald's, I'm loving it. We don't love the outcome here. Overtime loss, 26-23. Vikings win it. We go to the locker room. Jeff Loggeman has Dwight Lowry.
All right, thank you, Brian. Dwight, obviously a pretty quiet locker room with an opportunity to win it there at the end of the game, but you guys came up short. That's a tough one.
Yeah, it's always a tough one to swallow, especially because of how hard we worked, you know, since April and whatnot. And, you know, you're excited about the first game and everything like that, and we want to make a statement about our team because we feel like we've been getting disrespected this whole entire time. It hurts to lose like this, but there is some good that can come from it as long as we learn and continue to progress and understand that, you know, this game's over. We got to be on to the next one.
You have to be proud of your offense, the way they responded there at the end of the fourth quarter, though. When you need a touchdown drive, they pulled it together.
Yeah, they definitely did their job as far as, you know, being in that situation and putting us in a position to win. You know, as a defense, you know, we have to be able to prevent the offense from scoring, and we weren't able to do that to the ability that we shown earlier in the game. And, you know, obviously there will be adjustments throughout the week, and I think we'll be all right.
All right, thank you, Dwight.
All right.
All right, that's Dwight Lowry. Jaguars fans score a touchdown with GEICO. In just 15 minutes, you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Visit GEICO.com or call 800-947-AUTO today for your free rate quote. It won't show in the stats, but I want to lead with it because we rarely lead talking about offensive tackle play. The storyline all week was just how good Jared Allen is, and he is a great one, a four-time All-Pro. But today, he didn't even show up in the stat sheet. No tackles, no sacks. Now he got pressure, and he made things happen. So it's not fair to say that he didn't do anything today. But what I think it means is that Eugene Monroe played outstanding, and he did. Blaine Gabbert took a beating at times today because the Vikings just brought everybody, and he barely had an opportunity once they lost Evan Britton and Cam Bradfield. They're playing with an undrafted rookie at left guard, and they're playing with a journeyman at right tackle. So it was a very difficult uphill battle for Blaine Gabbert. And Gabbert, who finishes with having completed 23 of 39 passes and a 96.1 passer rating, is with Jeff Loggeman.
All right, thank you, Brian. Blaine, obviously at the end of the ball game there, the emotions riding high, and then all of a sudden they respond and it goes to overtime. A wild ride, but that's the NFL, isn't it?
Yeah, that is the NFL, the roller coaster ride, like you said, of the emotional highs and the emotional lows, and we got to do our best job to fight through that. But at the end of the day, this is the first game. You haven't seen the end of us. We're going to bounce back next week and have another great game.
What an amazing catch by Cecil Shorts there to get the touchdown at the end of that ball game. Holy cow.
Yeah, it was they ended up going single high. We had four verts on. I pumped the safety, and I just gave him a chance. And that's all you need. And when those guys are out there on the outside, they're going to make plays when the ball's in the air.
Mike Mularkey, the message was, hey, look, we're going to be a good football team to me in this postgame, obviously. But you guys, even though you lost, you have to feel that you've gained confidence as a football team today's game.
Yeah, you never want to lose a game, but we played solid football. We got to eliminate a couple mistakes here and there. And we're going to watch the film, correct those, and come back hungry next week.
All right, thank you, Blaine.
Yep, thanks, Jeff.
All right, that's Blaine Gabbert, who today completed 23 of 39 passes, which is a completion percentage of about 59%. And that was for 260 yards, two touchdowns, and a passer rating of 96.1. His leading receiver was Cecil Shorts, 4 grabs, 74 yards in the touchdown. LaRon Robinson showed up today, 5 for 66. Mercedes Lewis, 5 of 52 in a touchdown, first time in the end zone since the season finale back in 2010. Justin Blackman, 3 of 24. Maurice Jones-Drew, 3 for 18. And how about Drew? Also the leading rusher, 19 carries, 77 yards. So that's 22 touches for 95 yards for a guy who's been back only a week. Rashad Jennings left the ball game with an injury we are not certain of. You heard Mike Mularkey say they didn't want to risk it with him. So we'll try to have an update for you as we go through later in the show. But obviously nothing is certain. Jaguars finished today with 362 yards of offense, but they give up 389. Ponder 270, no touchdowns, no interceptions, passer rating 103.1. Adrian Peterson, 17 carries, 84 yards, 2 touchdowns. Percy Harvin, 6 receptions for 84 yards. He also carried the ball 5 times for 20 yards. That is the stat check, and it's time to bring it down to the final play, the Bud play of the game, brought to you by Bud Light Easy. 35 seconds left to play, Jaguars trailing by 5. Who knew that they could be in the position to win the ball game? Blaine Gabbert knew.
Mike Thomas, Cecil Shorts, head right. Blackman and Robinson are left. No timeouts. Down 5. Pressure coming. Gabbert plants, turns, and he's going for the whole ball of wax, and he's got Cecil Shorts. Shorts catches it! Touchdown, Jacksonville! Oh, my goodness!
He caught it. We weren't certain until he came up with it in his hands, and the official said touchdown. Jaguars went for 2. Justin Blackman grabbed it, and that gave him a 23-20 advantage. 20 seconds left. Now, obviously, people will question the decision not to kick it deep and instead put it in the hands of the upback who took it to the 30, which gave him a shot to go a couple yards and get. But you know what? I'm telling you, if they hadn't gone and punted the ball on 4th and 10 at the 30 with 2 minutes to play, I mean, there was some coaching going on this field today. And the Vikings made a couple of more plays, and that was the end of it. 26-23, our final. I'd like to thank J.P. Shadrick for his work on the sidelines today. He was certainly busy with all of the injuries. The folks at CopyFax, who each week so meticulously print our game charts, they are the official and only provider of business machines to the Jacksonville Jaguars. Also, I'd like to thank John Dineen from Atlantic Beach for making the trip to the Metrodome for today's game. Producer, spotter, helping out with everything. This quick break before we introduce the final two gentlemen, that is tomorrow night, 7 o'clock, CBS 47. Join Jeff Loggeman and Eugene Monroe, the special guest on Jaguars All Access. Our engineer is Scott Kushner. We certainly appreciate everything he does to keep us on the air. And Jaguars Football on Radio is so expertly produced each and every week by our executive producer, Joe Fortunato. And I'm just told this, that All Access is Tuesday night this week because there is a doubleheader on Monday Night Football. So All Access Tuesday night at 7 on CBS 47. Jeff Loggeman, special guest Eugene Monroe. For Jeff Loggeman, I'm Brian Sexton. We put you in the capable hands of Mr. Culpepper and Mr. Marco Coleman with more analysis, statistics, and thoughts, plus your calls on the Winn-Dixie postgame show. Final score, final time. From Mall of America Field at the Metrodome in Minneapolis, overtime loss for the Jaguars, 26-23. Good night, everybody.
Welcome back to the Winn-Dixie postgame show. Now from Jaguars Central, Culpepper, Marco Coleman here after the Jaguars lose it in overtime, 26-23. You need a truck that works for you even when you're not working. The 2012 Silverado is the most dependable, longest-lasting, full-size pickup truck that fits your lifestyle. See your Southern Chevy dealer today, proud sponsor of the Jacksonville Jaguars. All right, Marco, let's spend some time talking about the offense in particular. And I want to start with Blaine Gabbert because so much of this season is about what Blaine Gabbert shows. You know, what he does, how he develops, the kind of maturation that takes place. Give me your report on Blaine Gabbert here in the first game of the 2012 season.
I'll say he did a pretty good job. You know, he made plays at the right times, a couple of missed opportunities also at the same time. But, hey, all you can ask is that, hey, quarterback, have us in a position to win the game. And there it is. He had a position not only to put the team in a position to win, but almost, you know, to win the game with that last pass to Shorts. That was a big play, huge play.
Does that made play at the end of regulation overshadow some of the things you were critical of? You know, missing Blackman, a couple of other missed opportunities earlier in the ballgame. You'd rather see a guy in crunch time make that play than not be able to make it at that time.
Because the game was still going on. You figure we can forget all about everything that happened if you can just make this last play to win the game. That's all that matters is how did you come out. You know, those things you do wrong, they get magnified when you lose. Mm-hmm. But if you win the game, especially the way they could have won that game with that big pass, but that was the last play, I mean, hey, that's the way you want to go out.
Say what you will about Maurice Jones-Drew and his decision to hold out and come in the last minute and so forth. I thought that the story had not been told on whether that was a good idea or how it would impact the team. It clearly wasn't a good idea because he wasn't going to win the thing, and he winds up getting nearly $800,000 reportedly in fines. But in terms of how it would impact the team, 19 carries, 77 yards today. With the injury to Rashad Jennings, have we seen Maurice be sharper at times? Yes, but I don't think necessarily it was a result of not being here for the last 30. Maybe so, maybe not. I don't think you can empirically say, had he been here all through training camp, the Jaguars would have won this ballgame.
I think he would have had a bigger impact.
Now, you think so?
I agree wholeheartedly. That was a man that was out there that was playing just getting his legs under him. I'm not even sure if you're going to have as good a game next week just because his body has to go through that.
That's the bigger thing to me is how he bounces back.
Yeah, because
I wasn't so much concerned about could he run. It was more about how do you bounce back from that, not having gotten some of that contact during the preseason. But for this game today, do you think that the 38-day holdout affected the outcome of the game?
Definitely. I mean, I wouldn't say it affected the outcome. He would have been able to give more to the team. I mean, you figure a lot of those same plays could have still taken place. You know, the overthrow to Blackman, that still could have happened. The missed field goal, those things all still could have happened. But I think Maurice Jones-Drew would have been able to given more because, for one, he would have been starting. You know, you would have had him from the beginning of the game, and he would have been better shape. I think there were a couple of plays there. We would have had Mojo from last season that it was in better shape, better football condition, I'll say. He would have made some bigger plays during the course of that game.
There was a lot of concern about LaRon Robinson in the preseason. Only had two catches. Today, did more than double that. Five catches, 66 yards, including one really terrific one-handed catch he made. What do you think here so far of LaRon Robinson? It's very early, but does today wipe away any worries about him from the preseason?
He was solid, and that's what I think he's going to be, a solid wide receiver. You look at what the way that the team, Gabbert distributed the ball pretty well. I mean, they had throws to Montel Owens, Greg Jones. I mean, a lot of guys touched the ball, and all you have to do is just be solid, I believe, in this offense. I don't think there's going to need for anyone to be extraordinary, just make the plays when the opportunity comes, like Shorts at the end of the game.
Yeah, there are a lot of guys who in the receiving corps who have been under fire for one thing or another. LaRon Robinson under fire in the preseason for not being particularly productive. Five catches, 66 yards today. Mercedes Lewis, rightfully so, got a lot of criticism last year. Five catches, 52 yards and a touchdown. Cecil Shorts, who just got hammered last year. Well, I sat here and continue to say I think this kid can play, and not to give up on him. He makes a great catch for the touchdown, four catches, 74 yards. Justin Blackman, nobody's had much of a concern about him. Had just three catches today, though, 24 yards. Surprised that Justin Blackman wasn't a bigger part of the offense?
Well, I would imagine that the Minnesota Vikings did some things to try to make someone else beat him. I mean, you know, he's a phenomenal player. You saw it in the preseason, what he's capable of doing. So I'm sure they did some things coverage-wise that prevented Gabbert from going there, which, you know, hey, Gabbert did a good job of not throwing interceptions. They sent blitz after blitz after blitz, holding in there under pressure, making good decisions. The passing game, for the most part, did a pretty good job.
All right, we'll take time out when we come back. I want to talk about that offensive line. Also still to come, some of the key watershed decisions made late in the ball game from about the two-minute mark on, and we'll see if Marco and I are on the same page on some of these. I know we would have played it a little bit differently, you and I, if you were the head coach or if I was the head coach. We'll see who agreed with Mike Mularkey and who did not when we come back. Hey, we want to remind you that just in time for the Jaguars' home opener on Sunday, a week from today as Houston comes to town, check out the Seabest Cool Zone. It's just outside the south end zone. Great place to cool off before, during, and after the home games. You can watch the game, have refreshments, and when the weather gets cool and cold, the cool zone becomes a hot zone. Refresh yourself at the Seabest Cool Zone in the south end zone at Everbank Field. Jaguars postgame brought to you by Insurance Office of America, transforming the insurance industry to serve you better. We're back with more of the Winn-Dixie postgame show right after this timeout here on Jaguars Radio. Welcome back. Winn-Dixie postgame show. Cole Pepper, Marco Coleman here at Jaguars Central. Jaguars lose in overtime 26-23. Fans, nobody helps you get ready for game day better than Gate. Snacks, food, drinks, and more. Stop by Gate today. I want to remind you that Jaguars season tickets, group tickets, five game packs, single game seats, all on sale right now. To go all in, call 633-2000 or visit jaguars.com. All right, Marco, a number of coaching decisions that were made late in the ballgame. The first, certainly, is with 2 minutes to play in the game, Jaguars faced 4th and 10 from their own, where were they? Their own end of the field anyway. I think it was their own,
about like their own 30-yard line.
Mm-hmm. The decision was with two timeouts, do you punt it away and hope your defense can stop and still have some time left at the end to get it, or do you go for it right there? I said go for it.
And punt, and you see the outcome. Punt. Then we in overtime and ready to – well, could have won the game, though.
And the only reason why it worked, by the way.
Because the defense stopped them.
No, no, and because of the penalty that stopped the clock. And,
right.
You know, so it may have still worked, but it took it cut so much time out of there because of the – it kept so much time on the clock because of the penalty against the Vikings that it allowed the Jaguars to get it. The other thing that paid off on that, by the way, I'll point out, 56-yard punt by Anger, the rookie punter who
backed him up real
quick. Listen,
well.
Third round pick, everybody went, what, really? It's only one game, but the guy averaged over 53 yards per punt, and when they needed it, he booms 156 yards and, with no return.
And I would say they needed it because the defense, you know, without Darryl Smith, without Derek Cox, you can tell this is not the same defense that we saw last season. So now what's going to be really important? Mr. Anger. In that field position, giving the defense an opportunity by making teams have to go the long distance of the field.
And it was one of the things that allowed not only the Jaguars to have decent field position. They took over their own 24. It wasn't great field position, but decent. But then they made some big plays. And I think it's an obvious play. I think everybody would have gone for two, correct?
Mm-hmm.
You're up by one at that point. It was 21-20. Go for two, and you force a field goal to tie it rather than a field goal to win it for,
exactly.
for
and
Minnesota.
Again, another great decision, you know, by by Malarkey. Malarkey, excuse me.
Overtime on your face already there.
Yeah, I thought the decisions that he made were all pretty good, except for, I would say, the end of the first half. 30-something seconds, I believe that you had an opportunity to get yourself in position to kick a field goal. You know, I mean, you got to take each moment. It's not the preseason where you're just going to go in and, okay, whatever. But it was 30 seconds left, enough time to just get yourself across there with Scobie. You got to think 50 yards, I got to give him an opportunity, a 50-yard field goal.
Okay, so let me ask you this, though. The other decision that had to be made there was after the Gabbert to Shorts touchdown and the Justin Blackmon two-point conversion, instead of booting it deep, they hit one, and I don't know the answer to this. I don't know whether it was called as not a boomed kick, or if it was called that way and as a deep kick, and Scobie just didn't hit it right. My guess is the way it looked was that they were trying to kind of hit a line drive squibber down there that would make it would bounce around a little bit, make it harder for Harvin to get a big return. Don't you have to kick it deep there? I mean, there was 20 seconds left. You got a guy who's terrific at kicking touchbacks.
And the coverage had been pretty good all game, too.
Coverage had been all right, and you have perfect conditions in the dome. Don't you have to kick it away?
I'll have to agree with you on that one. I think you go ahead and, you know, Scobie's capable of kicking it out of the end zone.
Sure.
And if you can at least kick it at least a yard or two before it gets out of the end zone, I don't think Harvin will bring it back because 20 yards will be better than trying to start at the 10.
Well, and so that's it drives me crazy. Unless it's going to be the last play of the game, I don't squib it at any point. I kick it deep. Boom it away, let it go.
Because, you know, those guys on the return team are told, just let that thing keep on going mm-hmm. and roll until it hits one of those guys in the back. You know what I mean? Unless you're going to squib it and go ahead and just allow it to just stay at about the 35 or hit one of those linemen. But if you're going to squib it so far, then you might as well go ahead and try to kick it out of the end zone.
And it gave Minnesota the opportunity in 14 seconds. They drive down, get far enough for Blair Walsh, a 55-yard field goal. There will be some consternation, I'm certain, over the play call at the end, the last play call. I didn't have a particular problem with it. If it's run right and LaRon Robinson catches it, Jaguars have the first down and the drive continues.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you figure it's always hindsight when those type of plays are called and they don't, you don't connect on them. I mean, the same could be said. Well, I wouldn't say with the shorts play, because that was pretty much all you had at that time, is to go ahead and take a shot, and they did, and it ended up working. But then in the overtime, same type of thought, but just didn't work out quite the way they had anticipated.
Yeah, and that's clearly one of the issues that you know, will be talked about as we go down the list here of the litany of things. Anytime you have a lead and lose it and wind up losing the ball game, a lot of little things you can pick at.
Yeah.
Again, it's the old saying, winning makes everything better. Indeed. Visit Sonny's today and try the new barbecued baskets, the slow-smoked pulled and sliced meats basket, just $7.99, or for just a little more, choose between two other mouth-watering baskets. Sonny's, the first name in barbecue. We'll come back, talk a little bit about the offensive line, where the Jaguars go from here, as well as the defense. Are there problems on the defense beyond just the injuries that the Jaguars are dealing with? We'll ask Marco about that. Also still to come, the Sexton Summary, the good, the bad, and the ugly, and so much more. This is the Winn-Dixie Postgame Show here on the Jaguars Radio Network. Bueller Swiss Watch Company, proud to be the official watch of the Jaguars. Bueller Swiss Watches, available at Allen's Jewelers in Jacksonville. The Faceted Rainbow in Ocala, the Tallahassee Diamond Center in Tallahassee. Treasures Fine Jewelers in Palatka, and J. Carbone Jewelers in Valdosta. The Winn-Dixie Postgame Show continues. Cole Pepper, Marco Coleman here. All right, offensive line certainly has to be something to be talked about. How concerned are you about where the Jaguars go from here with these injuries? I mean, we've got kind of tertiary reviews. Evan Britton, Cameron Bradfield, Uche Waniri. Some of them would come back in, but they have Daniel Baldridge, remember, on the practice squad, and also Beekman was inactive today. So it's not as if they don't have some bodies in-house that they can go to as the week approaches. But, boy, just not a lot of options, you know, with these, some of these injuries.
Yeah, well, hopefully these guys, you know, it's early in the season that they can get through these injuries. You know, you hate to start the season off and get these type of nicks that linger on throughout the whole season to where you're hobbled and, you know, takes away from practice time and things of that nature. So hopefully they can recover fast. You know, like Uche, don't know how serious his deal is. You don't know, you know, with Britton. You know, get, hopefully these guys can get themselves back healthy so they can get in there and maintain what, you know, the cohesion of that unit. But I'll say, when they plug guys in, they do a pretty good job.
And I'll ask the question here, as far as injuries are concerned, the defensive side of the football. What we saw today, one of the things that really is an issue was tackle. It was something that Mike Mularkey said was an issue in the preseason. We hadn't really talked a whole lot about it. How much of an issue is it, and how much do you think is attributable to not having Derek Cox and Daryl Smith in there and not being full speed as far as that defensive group?
Well, you figure out of all the cornerbacks that they have, Derek Cox is the best tackling cornerback that they have. When you talk about the linebackers, the most sure tackler, the guy that makes the most of the plays, I'm going to have to, again, go with Mr. Daryl Smith. So you're missing two guys that are critical in the ability to make tackles. And then also you got to consider who they played against. You know, Peterson, who knew that he was going to be playing and playing at the level that he was playing. When he is good, he's one of the toughest running backs to tackle. Percy Harvin, probably one of the most elusive guys. You're going to miss tackles against those type of guys, but it doesn't help when you don't have your best tacklers in the game.
All right, well, the Jaguars are going to have to get some of those guys back in a hurry when you start talking about the offense of the Houston Texans coming to town. Matt Schaub and Arian Foster and Andre Johnson, maybe the best quarterback, running back, wide receiver combo of any team in the National Football League. When you take that all in, I mean, you can find terrific running back, wide receiver, or quarterback, wide receiver combos. But all three, I mean, Schaub has been to a couple of Pro Bowls. He's very good. Arian Foster might be the best running back in the game, and Andre Johnson, other than Calvin Johnson, might be the next best wide receiver in the game.
Well, the defensive task next week will be a lot different than what it is. Than what it was today. You know, they had a good first half, I would say, but then in that second half, from that 2-minute drill on, when they allowed them to score, at that point, from then on, defense was pretty, they looked real unstable for the rest of the game, and allowing teams to just drive down the field. It was only, they made plays when they had to, holding the teams to field goals, but you got to think, when you're playing against an offense like the Houston Texans, you can't give them those opportunities. They're going to convert those long drives and the touchdowns.
All right, we'll take time out when we come back. The Sexton Summary. We'll have highlights from the Jaguars' opening day overtime loss in Minnesota. Also still to come, we'll have the protector of the game, as well as the coverage of the game, and the good, the bad, and the ugly. Stick around. More to come right here on the Winn-Dixie Postgame Show on Jaguars Radio. Welcome back to Winn-Dixie Postgame Show. Cole Pfeffer, Marco Coleman here. Jaguars lose the opener in overtime in the Dome. It's time now for the Metro PCS Sexton Summary, the highlights and lowlights of today's game through the calls of the voice of the Jaguars, Brian Sexton. Jaguars' first drive of the season was impressive. 17 plays, 77 yards, 9 minutes, 22 seconds, but it resulted in a Josh Kobe 19-yard field goal. They couldn't punch it in from close range. So it was a 3-0 Jaguars lead until the second quarter, when another long drive, 11 plays, 78 yards, and the Jaguars would find their way into the end zone.
Tight end in motion is Potter. Here's the play action. Gabbert wants to throw to Mercedes Lewis. Touchdown, Jacksonville! Mercedes Lewis grabs his first of a new season, a year after he was shut out of the end zone.
Mercedes with a touchdown, but the extra point was blocked, so the Jaguars led it 9-0 at that point. Late in the half, Marco was alluding to it, with less than 2 minutes remaining, Minnesota had the football, and boy, the Jaguars just could not find a way to tackle Percy Harvin. Ripped off catch and runs from 16 yards and 15 yards, both for first downs, and then with Minnesota inside the 5-yard line, they would turn to a guy who, until just a couple of days ago, and really maybe till this morning, we weren't sure was even going to be on the field. That's Adrian Peterson.
Here's the handoff, and there goes Peterson to the end zone. Touchdown, Minnesota.
So the touchdown for Peterson made it a 9-7 Jaguars lead at the break. In the second half, Jaguars turnover, fumble on a snap. Vikings recovered it, and they would quickly take advantage.
Peterson has one rushing touchdown in the ballgame already. Takes the handoff, looking for room, leaps into the end zone. He's got two.
And for the first time in the ballgame, Minnesota had the lead 14-9. The teams would trade field goals a couple of times. It was 20-15. The Jaguars, with time winding down, less than 30 seconds remaining, they had the football on their own 39-yard line, or rather on the 39 of the Vikings.
Down five. Pressure coming. Gabbert plants, turns, and he's going for the whole ball of wax, and he's got Cecil Shorts. Shorts catches it! Touchdown, Jacksonville! Oh, my goodness! What a catch by Cecil Shorts!
From 39 yards out, and after the missed extra point earlier in the game, the Jaguars were compelled to go for two, and they did, connecting on a Blaine Gabbert to Justin Blackmon pass. It was off a really nifty play, a lot of misdirection, and the Jaguars had a three-point lead, and with 20 seconds left, you thought, hey, that was probably it. But after a short kickoff, couple of plays downfield, Blair Walsh lined up for the game-tying 55-yard field goal with time just about ticking off the clock.
There's the snap in the placement. The kick is up on the way. He's got distance, and he got it. Wow. He drilled it. He got it. And we're going to overtime.
And in overtime, Walsh on the first Minnesota possession booted one from 38 yards. Jaguars had one chance, needing a field goal to tie or a touchdown to win. They face fourth and three from their own 28-yard line.
Gabbert fighting the crowd noise in an all-out blitz. Plants, turns, launches a ball. He's looking for Robinson, and it's incomplete, and the game is over.
And so that's the way it ended. The Jaguars lose it 26-23. That was the Metro PCS Sexton Summary. With no signed contracts, Metro PCS lets you unlimit yourself. We'll take time out. Back with the protector of the game and the coverage of the game as the Winn-Dixie postgame show continues right after this timeout here on Jaguars Radio. Welcome back to the Winn-Dixie Postgame Show. Cole Pfeffer, Marco Coleman here. Time now to name the protector of the game. It's brought to you by the Insurance Office of America. Marco, who do you have for the protector of the game?
Oh, Eugene Monroe.
I think it's got him.
Was Jared Allen even there? I mean,
yep,
after that first little,
yep,
you know, offsides, after that, you know, this guy was completely nullified. And I didn't see a whole lot of help being given to Maurice, considering,
yeah,
you know, down on the other side.
Eugene, yeah.
Down to, with Whimper being out. So yep, they kind of had a lot more help for Whimper than they did for Eugene Monroe. I had to say he did an outstanding job again.
And it wasn't
Allen.
69, but 96 that was giving the Jaguars some problems in terms of the pass rush.
Indeed he was, you know, but Eugene Monroe held that end down on the left side.
It's just one game, but we saw Eugene take a real step last year, and establish himself as a very good left tackle. Maybe this is the first step of him establishing himself as a premier left tackle in the NFL.
When you can hold a player like Jared Allen down the whole game, not only did he stop him in the pass rush, he wasn't in on a lot of tackles. So that means he stayed in his pocket all game long. And like I said, it's about that time for Eugene Monroe to make that move to being an elite tackle. He has the capability.
All right, time now for the Baptist Health coverage of the game. Baptist Health, depend on us for life. Coverage of the game.
Oh, my man Antoine Blake on special teams was covering the kicks like nobody, no other.
I mean, liked him from the beginning of preseason.
This guy gets down there. He made two tackles on those balls that were catchable, and he did a great job again. He was one of the first guys down, and I have to say that his coverage was outstanding in the kicking game.
Here's a guy who basically came out of nowhere. He's an undrafted rookie free agent and has been he looks like the next coming of Montel Owens on coverage, doesn't he?
Montel has made a career of being on those special teams. A lot of guys play for a long time. A guy like Steve Tasker played forever as a special teams demon.
All right, we'll take time out. Come back with the good, the bad, and the ugly. The Winn-Dixie postgame show continues right here on the Jaguars Radio Network. Back here on the Winn-Dixie postgame show, Cole Pepper, Marco Coleman. And his honor has the honor of presenting the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Well, I'm going to say one good thing. You know, Blaine Gabbert, I thought, did a good job of handling the blitzes. It was obvious that the Minnesota Vikings made it a point to come after Blaine Gabbert. He stood in there, made some good decisions with the ball, may not have connected every time, but made good decisions, no interceptions. I thought Blaine's, you know, handling of the blitz was outstanding today. Bad, I'm going to have to say the missed opportunities. I'm going to have to throw blame right in that. You know, that pass in the red zone where he overthrew Blackman was a big play. The field goal being missed and blocked came to hurt him at the end of the game. You know, the fumble at the start of the first half. These type of miscues, when you want to win football games, are critical in being able to handle and taking advantage of all your opportunities. Ugly, I'm going to have to go to these injuries, man. The offensive line is just being ravished by these injuries. Hopefully it doesn't linger on and hinder them later on during the season, along with the injuries to the guys that are on the sideline Daryl Smith and Derek Cox. They need these guys in there to be the dominant defense that they were last year. These guys are critical, just like MJD, how important he is to that offense. Daryl Smith, I would say, is the same, is equivalent to what's going on in that defense. They need to get guys back off of the injury list.
Well, Derek Cox is the best cover guy, best tackling cornerback, and it's obvious. I mean, when Paul Puzlesny says Daryl Smith's our best defender, and he's got the captain's C on his chest, you know that how important Daryl Smith is.
The guy
is
extremely important to defense.
All right, to next week, the Jaguars take on the Houston Texans, the home opener. It should be a big one. Boy, it becomes a very important game early in the season for the Jaguars if they're going to, you know, hang around and be one of those surprise teams. This would be a great time to get that victory and surprise some folks, but the only team in the AFC South who won on opening day, Houston Texans, come to town next week. That'll do it for us here on the network. If you're listening in Jacksonville or online, stick around. More to come. The Southern Ford Dealer Scoreboard Show is straight ahead. You can join the conversation at 355-NFL1, 1-800-355-6351. You can also tweet your questions or comments to me at Cole Pepper. Jaguars go to the Dome in the Great White North and come away with an overtime loss, a disappointing loss, but they showed that they are an improved team. If they can stay healthy, they definitely have the arrow pointing up. But more work still remains, and the Jaguars do not have an easy task next week as they come home to take on the team picked to win the AFC South. Jaguars lose it on the road in overtime. Final score 26-23. Stick around. The Southern Ford Dealer Scoreboard Show is coming up next after the Jaguars' season-opening loss in OT on the road.